Well, back again, Island Life, and Alex Stone has come to talk about the Marine Reserve proposal. Great. So, Alex, this has been all over the news. It's in the Gulf News. There are some ads in the paper taken out by the Keep Our Beaches group. So I think this is what we're going to look at today is just what the Marine Reserve proposal is. And then perhaps you could address some of the concerns that people have raised over the last month or so. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Sharon. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, the Marine Reserve, we're calling it an initiative because proposal is gets people a bit concerned. It's an initiative to establish another marine reserve on the northern side of Waiheke Island, somewhere along the northern coastline. The background to it is our group was formed, a little volunteer group. We were formed after we read the 2011 State of the Hauraki Gulf Report, which reported ongoing environmental decline across all considerations, everything, whether it's seabirds, marine mammals, everything was in decline across the Gulf generally. And the report ended up with a very bold statement by scientists. For them to say things like this is very bold. They said, "And if we want to do something to improve the state of the Gulf, bold, innovative, and sustained things have to be done. So the status quo is basically not an option." So our little community group thought, well, we live on this island. We're the biggest single community that's living entirely surrounded by the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park. We thought it would be good for us to take the lead. And we thought the best way to work towards greater biodiversity in the Gulf is to propose or have an initiative going to establish another marine reserve. The rationale behind that is very strong. The science behind it, shall we say, is compelling and irrefutable. We need more marine reserves in the Gulf, and that's just the bottom line. At the moment,
so what does a marine reserve actually do?
A marine reserve is a place where you can't take fish or shellfish. But apart from that, you can swim, you can do underwater ballet, you can do boating, kayaking, scuba diving, you can anchor a boat, you can launch a boat, you can do everything but taking fish or shellfish. Yeah.
Right. And why? And what do they actually do for the sea?
Marine reserves are basically a guarantee. Just like on land, we all recognize the value of parks or national parks. It's the same in the sea. The interesting comparison, if we often compare things to land-based conservation efforts. In New Zealand, 30% of New Zealand land area is under some kind of conservation protection. In the sea, it's quite the opposite. In the Hauraki Gulf, 0.3% is in marine reserve at the moment. So 99.7% of the Hauraki Gulf is available for extractive industries and recreational fishing.
Yeah. Right, and so it's that the scientists are saying is damaging to the ecosystem.
Scientists say that at the very least, 10% of the Gulf needs to be in marine reserve. There are three levels. If you want a marine reserve, if you want a network, you need to have them spread around the place, obviously. If you want a network of marine reserves to work for, in terms of education, recreation, and science research, it needs to be, the network needs to cover at least 10% of the area. Mm. If you'd like the Marine Reserve network to work in terms of securing biodiversity, it needs to be at least 20% of the area. And if you'd like the Marine Reserve network to have maximum benefit for fisheries, both recreational and commercial, that network needs to cover 30% of the area. Right. So think of where we're at right now. Right now we've got 0.3%. And people promoting marine reserves are looking just for a little bit more space. And for this idea, which is irrefutable in terms of science and in terms of an ethical approach to future generations' needs, is kind of necessary. Yeah. Mm.
So,
long answers.
No, that's all good. But you're moving from 0.3, and then how much of this would this cover, this area that you're talking
about?
Our initiative,
it's hard to say, Sharon, because at the moment we have no lines on the map. Right now there are no lines on the map I personally made a mistake a few months ago, being a bit over-enthusiastic, and I did scribble some lines on the map. Big mistake. Because we want, at the moment, just to get through the principles behind it. So right now, as we stand, as I said to the community board on Thursday, there are no lines on the map. So I can't say how big the reserve would be.
Okay, well, that's interesting, because one of the big criticisms, or one of the big things that people are raising, is why is this marine reserve being, when, why are the lines on the map taking in two really important public beaches and public areas and places where there's lots of population? Why isn't it further down, like near Cactus Bay, or, you know, or past Donnitangy?
That's a good question. It's a good question. And I'm just got to reiterate, I made a mistake drawing the lines on the map. If I go back to our initiative is to be based on science, and we the scientists have advised us that to do a credible process of investigation, we need at least four surveys of different types. We've done the first survey, which is an underwater topography survey. We want to raise money for a biological survey, and that'll also, after that will come a social science survey, obviously people's attitudes and so on, and then maybe an economic impact analysis. And but the biggest part is the biological survey, which will cost tens of thousands of dollars.
And where is
I couldn't
survey on where. So are you doing that all along that coastline?
Yes,
all along round Waiheke or on those public beaches?
No. The survey area that we are a small group and can't afford to survey the entire Gulf. And because we're based on Waiheke and benefit from Waiheke, we thought it'd be good to have a marine reserve somewhere attached to Waiheke to balance the different ecosystem in the south. And so the survey area we've asked the scientists to look at is the entire northern coastline.
Right. So there's, but, and the entire northern coastline, some of it falls out of the boundaries that you've drawn on your map.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, in fact, those boundaries, just to clarify, because it's been a real bone of contention, and I've been lost with it myself. Yeah. It's not necessarily those lines.
No, not at all.
No. And, okay, and so you'd be quite prepared to move those lines somewhere along so that it's not in a public, along a public beach area.
That's a possibility, definitely. It's just one of the tenets of science, and because we based this whole thing on science, one of the basic tenets of science is if you don't know what you don't know, you can't presume. So it's not for me to say, before the results of all these surveys have come in, exactly where it can or can't be.
Right.
But so it could be.
So part of this is a sort of quite a long process in the sense that this might take another 5 years to get these different surveys, or, you know, by the time you save the money to do it or not. Or?
Yeah, I think, Sharon, at this stage it's going to take more than 5 years because there's obviously quite vigorous opposition, and the average sort of time span for a marine reserve proposal in New Zealand is about 15 years.
Oh, really?
And I must admit, once again, I was a bit enthusiastic earlier. I thought we'd get it. I thought it was a no-brainer. We'd make much faster progress. But no, it'll take a long time, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so addressing some of these other concerns then, this notion of so basically, do some of the other – I'm a bit confused now because I didn't understand that about the lines. But the concerns that have been raised have been around access to the ramp
at Sandy
Bay. Which I mean, I'm not a boatie, but it seems to me that, you know, that is a really important access point for people getting into the water.
Yeah, okay.
So would that be affected? I mean, part of what you're saying is that it might not even include Sandy Bay.
It could be that. Sharon, I'll have to, in answering this question, I'll just have to give you a little sort of disclaimer in advance. With the marine reserve, we're talking about biodiversity across the Gulf for future generations. Getting down to the nitty niggly stuff about parking at a boat ramp, I think is a complexity after the, you know, it's a how shall we say, it's an argument that It's a debate that comes down the track a wee bit, and it's not directly related to improving biodiversity in the Gulf.
It's not. Yeah.
But I can answer the question.
It's just because, you know, biodiversity, not biodiversity. If I was a boatie and that was the only access point I had on the northern side, I'd be really pissed off.
Sorry, I just have to correct you there, Sharon. You're not a boatie. I am. I've sailed all my life, and I've lived on Waiheke for 18 years, and I've sailed all around this coastline all that time, and I know full well what, you know, the launching and boating facilities are.
Right, so are there other launching?
Absolutely. Sandy Bay is not the only launching spot on the northern coast. You can launch at Matiatia, you can launch at the left-hand side of Onaroa Beach, you can launch at Sandy Bay, and you can launch at Onitangi Beach. You know the famous tractors at Onitangi Beach?
Yes.
That's what they're there for, to launch boats.
Right.
And Onitangi Beach, as we all know, is a vast expanse.
Mm.
And Onitangi, to be fair, Onitangi it will be very difficult to launch in a northerly wind, but at least half of the time our prevailing wind is southwesterly, in which case Onitangi is pretty flat. The left-hand side of Onaroa Beach has got hundreds of meters of beach where you can launch. And for 15 or more years, the dinghy sailing group from the local boating club has been launching boats there, and we've never not been able to launch the rescue boat. It's totally possible. So they're, if you count them up on your fingers, there are about 8 or 10 launching spots along the northern coast. If your boat's very big and heavy and you need a big 4x4 and a trailer, there might be 6 launching spots. But beaches like Palm Beach or Little Onaroa, you can launch a hand-carried boat. If you can pick up your kayak or your tinny, you can launch at those beaches too. So there is a lot of space to launch boats around here. And another thing I could add is there's been a lot of surveys done about recreational fishing, and the average recreational fishing boat has a 60-horsepower motor. That's the average. Sure, there's some small tinnies with a 5-horsepower motor, but most of them are fairly reasonably sized, seaworthy boats with a 60-horsepower motor. A boat like that can plane at between 20 and 30 knots. So if you wanted to get to the northern side, you could launch at Kennedy Point or at Wharf Road in Ostend, which are very, very sheltered launching places. And a boat like that could get to the northern side within 20 minutes of motoring. So access to the water is possible, but I do concede that Sandy Bay can be a pinch point. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then the other pinch, or the other issue that people have been mentioning is this notion of Nudie Bay.
Yes. I'm sorry, I shouldn't take the objections frivolously, but I don't think that's an issue really.
Right. The objection that's been raised to me is the fact that it's one of those things that's tolerated but not in law.
Exactly.
But yet there are lots of people who enjoy it.
That's fine.
And so people are worried that if you start mucking about with legal, you know, marine reserves and it covers that part of the bay, and of course it's a really beautiful bay that people will want to come in there, do their snorkeling, and then they're going to be all appalled that there are some naked people.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. I've had people say to me, you know, there'll be school tour groups at Nudie Bay, and I think that's a bit of a stretch. You know, no school teacher in his or her right mind would take their primary school kids to Nudie Bay. So the people that would come to Nudie Bay would be only from the seaward side, boat access. And if you go to Nudie Bay at any day during the summer, there are boats there now. You know, some weekends in the summer, it's full of boats. It doesn't seem to be a problem just yet. The other thing I should mention is that a marine reserve happens below mean high tide mark. And so the marine reserve is the bit under the water, not the beach. Mm. Not the beach above the high tide mark, yeah.
Right, so it wouldn't be covered by yeah, okay. Mm.
There is a little bit of a misunderstanding perhaps about where a marine reserve starts and stops.
Mm.
And you have to perhaps try compare similar situations. The majority of marine reserves in New Zealand adjoin Department of Conservation land for the historical fact that it was just easier to get them established in front of already land that was already protected. But where a marine reserve is in front of land that is owned in another way, but whether it's private ownership or city council ownership, the marine reserve stops below the high tide mark.
Yeah. Right, okay. Because the other issues around the dog walkers and the use of the beach area, that's been another...
Yeah, this one has been a bit of a concern to our campaign because it's a significant part of the opposition, the negative campaign. I think it's the second biggest thing they highlight on their ads. And I'm afraid it's a little bit... There's a little bit of misinformation there. If you look at this week's Gulf News, it's quite interesting. On the very back page, I've got a wee rebuttal where I say 6 marine reserve beaches in New Zealand allow dogs. On the letters page, one of the negative campaigners has said, taking the sort of other view of arithmetic, there are 34 marine reserves in New Zealand, 28 don't allow dogs. So we agree, 6 marine reserves...
So basically, what we're saying is that the condition of being
a
marine reserve doesn't preclude the presence of dogs, and that could be something that's negotiated.
Absolutely,
into it,
unless the land on the sea on the landward side is already dock land, because then the docks are already excluded. But if the land on the landward side is under different ownership, a community can make a plan. I should give some comparisons, and I can read the list of marine reserves where you're allowed to walk dogs. The first one is Long Bay at above Auckland. Dogs are allowed there. During daylight saving, dogs are allowed before 10 and after 6:30. Outside daylight saving, dogs are allowed all day. That sounds pretty much like what we've got here. Kapiti Marine Reserve, which is off the town of Paraparaumu. They have an interesting situation. They drew the marine reserve boundary to angle off the main beach of the town, so it actually doesn't come ashore. But the marine reserve boundary comes ashore for a kilometre between Paraparaumu and the town of Waikanae. And on that kilometre of coastline, it's around an estuary, so there are ducklings and things. And the local rules of the Kaipiti Coast District Council say you can walk dogs there on a lead.
Okay, yeah. So the other thing is you can be selective about exactly where the marine reserve goes.
Yeah, you can. So potentially, a community can decide on the
excludes a beach.
Yeah, absolutely. You could exclude a beach. Yeah. Another one is Taputuranga Marine Reserve, which is in South Wellington. Most people know it as Island Bay, and there are 3 beaches there: there's Ophira Bay, Island Bay, and Houghton Bay. And if you Google the Wellington City Council dog walking info, you'll see that dogs are allowed at all times on one of the bays, and one of the other bays the dogs are restricted, you know, just like daylight saving kind of situation. And half of the beach is no dogs because it's a place where seals come ashore. So it looks like communities can
are marine reserves in quite highly, that Wellington one is quite highly populated, isn't
That's right, yeah. One of the elements of misinformation in the negative campaign is they stated quite strongly that marine reserves in front of built-up areas are unprecedented, and therefore this one must fail. There are about 6 or 7 marine reserves in New Zealand that are built in front of built-up areas. Once again, Long Bay, Kapiti, Pollen Island off Auckland, Sugarloaf Islands off New Plymouth is a marine protected area, but adjoining it, that's the front in front of New Plymouth City, but adjoining it, just where the suburbs of New Plymouth kind of peter out, is another is a proper marine reserve called Tapuai. Then there's Taputuranga off Island Bay and
so
Wellington.
There's quite a few,
and there's
basically
one in Whangarei. In Australia there are half a dozen, and around the world there are many more.
Right,
so it is
okay.
it's not unprecedented.
But nonetheless, the opposition will come from people in built up areas.
Yeah, sure.
And the Hauraki Gulf, there's only 0.03% of marine reserves.
That's right.
So why does it have to be on a built up area at all? You're saying that it could be built somewhere that's not populated, or maybe just has one house on the
It. But
what would be the conditions under which that would happen, or is this just dependent on where the surveys come out that you're saying this will come out as the best place, or what are the factors that affect where that goes?
Okay, one of the most important elements to our initiative is we see the marine reserve as a a wonderful intergenerational gift to the future children of Waiheke. And I was instrumental in the establishment of the Sea Sports Academy at the high school. And this is just an example. And over the years, the Sea Sports Academy has become very popular. There are about 30 students in it right now. And the underwater modules of the Sea Sports Academy have become the most popular. And I find it a bit odd that we need to take them to Groat Island, to show our sea sports students what a wonderful underwater marine environment looks like. We've got to truck them all the way up to Goat Island or ship them all the way to Poor Knights. So also for primary school kids, we thought a marine reserve environment on our northern shore would be an extraordinary positive experiential learning classroom for the kids of Waiheke. So that's one of the good things about it. So if you made it extra remote, it would lose that distinct societal advantage.
That's part of the thinking. Yes. Yeah. Okay, interesting. And I think it's really interesting that you just, I mean, I think what you're doing is a very brave thing.
Oh, yes,
certainly.
Because, yes,
you know, it is set, as you say, there are only 0.03 percent of the Hauraki Gulf that is marine reserve.
Yeah, that's right.
And with the pressure from farming and the pressure from, you know, fishing and the degradation of our marine environment, something obviously has to be done.
Mm, that's right. Yeah.
Is part of the issue around education and making people see the value of a marine environment and the importance of that?
Absolutely.
Because it seems to me that potentially if all the concerns are addressed, one could have, there's no reason to be so oppositional. One could have an environment that's really positive for everyone.
Yeah, I agree with you. The existing marine reserves have become tourist magnets. People are inspired when they visit them. They think they're the most wonderful places. And we're saying we could have a wonderful place here. Yeah. Mm.
So again, actually, that was the last concern that people have said, oh, we're going to be absolutely swamped. There are going to be thousands of tour buses. There's going to be, I don't know, I can't remember how many hundred thousand people are going to, tens of thousands of people are going to come. Yeah. So do you have any answer to that? Because I think that's another concern, that people just want to, you know, relax a bit on Waiheke. And then the next thing they know, there's going to be like tour buses and ice cream stands everywhere.
No, it's a legitimate concern, sure, and it certainly is. I think the concerns are a little exaggerated in that the comparisons are made with Goat Island and Cathedral Cove on the Coromandel. And the comparisons are a little awkward in that Goat Island and Cathedral Cove are both on dock land, and both of them have very, very limited access. To reach, each of them has got a very small little beach, and each one has a single pathway basically leading down to the beach. I think the more relevant comparisons would be with Kapiti or the one in South Wellington, where you can see what you can see there isn't real overcrowding or all that issue. The other thing just to remember is that Waiheke itself is promoted quite vigorously internationally as a tourist destination. We know that Auckland City promotes it. It's just what happens. People are inspired to come and visit Waiheke, and if the marine environment is better, sure, there will be more people. But I think we should have the nous as a community to work out ways of managing that. The other point I can make is that it takes 10 to 15 years for a marine reserve to establish. Goat Island's been going for 50 years. So when you first establish a marine reserve, all it is a couple of yellow boys in the water and a spot where people can't fish. You don't get crowds of people immediately because it takes a while for the marine life to recover. Mm. And in that 10 to 15 years, I would think our community could figure out ways to manage visitor load. Yeah. Mm. The visitor load, I think, is manageable. People have said, used the headland sculpture on the Gulf as an example. I'm the chair of the gallery and, as such, one of the organizers of Headland Sculpture on the Gulf. And I can tell, so I know a little bit about it. This year, 40,000 people visited Headland over 3 weeks. And sure, the Portaloos were a bit smelly, but I think the island coped. And sure, there were queues at the ferries on some sunny days, but the island generally coped, and most businesses really liked it. And so if you were to spread 100,000 people, realistically, over 6 or 7 months, it would be probably, if you just start analysing the figures, it doesn't seem that scary. Mm. Yeah.
Also, I think, it just seems to me that we're an island destination anyway. So, so the chances of people only coming for that are... I think people dissipate because they would come
That would be
a part of their enjoyment. It wouldn't be the only thing that they'd be doing here. Yeah. They'd also be, going for a pizza or visiting Whakanefa or going down the bottom end. So they wouldn't all be just... And also, if 100,000 people came to the island, that would be a problem in itself.
Yeah.
Regardless of that those particular beaches, that would just be a problem. So
there's
I think
a price,
you're right. It's about managing tourism into the future.
And I think we've got enough sense to plan for that. There's also a price barrier. The comparison with Goat Island is, to get your family to Goat Island is $40 a petrol, from a Auckland suburb. To get a family of five from an Auckland suburb to Waiheke is a lot more than that. So,
can I just ask you one more question, which is around the success of the marine reserve that's already down the bottom end?
Te Matuku?
Yeah.
The interesting thing about Te Matuku is that it hasn't been very well monitored. It's been around for, correct me if I'm wrong, about 15 years maybe. Yeah, that sort of. But because of the ongoing funding cuts to the Department of Conservation, they actually haven't had the money to monitor it closely. There's anecdotal evidence that there's lots of flounder in the bay and so on. And fishermen seem to think it's good because I've photographed people fishing in the reserve. They think it's good. But it hasn't been properly monitored, but it seems to be working. It's on the small side for a marine reserve, and it's also difficult to monitor because the water, as we all know, is a bit more murky on the south side. But it's a functioning marine reserve.
And as a boatie, and I assume a fisherman as well, do you have any thoughts around fishing in the Gulf and commercial fishing in the Gulf? How all that quota stuff?
Yeah, it's a very emotive issue and very much in the news at the moment, and in my presentations about the Marine Reserve, I do talk about snapper because they're an iconic, some say, keystone species in the Gulf. But when we're talking about marine reserves, we do want to focus on biodiversity rather than a single species. That said, the snapper issue, there are just a couple of things about the snapper issue that need to be highlighted. For the first time this year, We've got some fairly decent data about snapper population numbers and stuff. There was a proper scientific census of snapper in 2012, and that showed that the snapper population in the Hauraki Gulf is about 24% of unfished biomass. So if you could imagine all the fishing that could be there without fishing, snapper as of 2012 in the Gulf apparently stand at about 24%. And this is a slow increase from about 10 to 12% of virgin biomass in the 1990s. The target for snapper in the Gulf is 40%, so we're halfway there. But there are some complicating factors. A lot of scientists consider the snapper population in the Gulf to be one and the same with the population in the Bay of Plenty because they migrate around the top of the Coromandel. The 2012 census showed that the snapper population in the Bay of Plenty is 6% of virgin biomass, which is considered a collapsed stock.
Oh, really? That's really tragic. So essentially, we kind of do need to be thinking about places where fish stocks can be replenished.
Exactly.
And thinking about reducing fishing, especially commercial fishing.
Yeah, well, there's another something that people just need to know. In 2012, the recreational take of snapper in the Gulf exceeded that of commercial fishing. Yeah. The commercial fishing estimate was bumped up by 20% to allow for underreporting and losses. And the recreational take in its assessment was quite conservative because of concerns about the way the data was collected. But in the end, it turned out that recreational take in the Gulf was around 2,500 tons last year, and commercial take was about 2,400 tons
last year. Oh, really? Year, yeah. So recreational fishing is actually a huge pressure on the Gulf?
In the inner Gulf, yeah. Right. The commercial fishing is limited in the inner Gulf. There's only long lining allowed on the northern coast of Waiheke for 3 months of a year, and then the trawling and stuff only happens on a line beyond Little Barrier. Yeah.
Right.
But overall, yeah. So it really gets a bit complicated,
yeah,
as you can
see.
Yeah.
But really, in terms of what we're talking about, it's really important that everyone gets on the same page and uses their resources to think about how best we can get a marine reserve on the island.
Yes.
And
yes.
So if people have spare resources, it would be really great if everyone works together to work out where that marine reserve can go.
Yeah, wouldn't it be lovely? Yeah, I think it's a matter of fairness. You know, New Zealanders are very strong on fairness. And with recreational fishermen, they at the moment have 99.7% of the Gulf to fish in. Take that to the land. Imagine if the local archery club expected 99.7% of the parks to go shoot kiriru with arrows. You know, it just wouldn't be the go. And so at sea, you know, if we just want a fair division, and the interesting thing is, if there's more marine reserves, the fishing will improve. That's been proven.
Yes. Yeah. Great. So huge benefits to marine reserves. We just need to work out where it needs to go.
Exactly, yeah.
And all get in behind the project and discuss the differences.
Yes, we should. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Great, great. Thank you very much, Alex, for coming in. That was lovely. And that was Alex Stone talking about the marine reserve. What did you say? I shouldn't initiative, not
the
proposal.
Because
the other thing around it is it's not cast in stone. It's a discussion document.
That's right, yeah.
So, and how can people be part of the discussion?
The best is just to contact me or contribute to letters to the paper, for instance. We're involved in a process of talking to community groups. So far, I've talked to about 18 community groups on the island, and this takes a while. But if any group of any size, if it's 2 people, if it's 100 people, I will talk to them, talk with them, show what we're on about, and happy to. So right now, the last presentation I made was at the high school. On next Tuesday, I'm talking to the teachers at the primary school.
Oh, wow.
We're in line. We're going to talk to the Probus Club and a fishing club. You know, they're just
great.
All of these presentations are part of a program. But if there's any group out there that wants to hear about it, give us a call.
Lovely. And there's also a Facebook page. If you're into Facebook,
I'm told
people
that,
use,
yeah, I
but
just,
you don't use
I just
it.
Learned this morning the Facebook page has been shut down. I don't know by who.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. But
everyone knows how to contact me on the island, yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much, Alex. Okay.